Sunday, Sunday best. Mother's tired, she needs a rest. The kids are playing up downstairs. Sister's sighing in her sleep. Brother's got a date to keep, he can't hang around.
Io's house in the middle of our street.
Io's house.
Isles House Live Edition. We're here post game 3-2 loss to the Kings. Before we get into it, we got to take care of the housekeeping. First things first, follow us on Twitter. Jack's at Isles, then Rocco at Pizza Sports Guy. I'm at Ethan GSN. Follow the podcast at Isles House. Subscribe wherever you get your favorite podcasts, namely iTunes and Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, rate us 5 stars, leave us a kind review. If you're watching live, go over to YouTube. Watch it there for a better experience and smash that subscribe button. We thank you for all of our live listeners and comments. And of course, let's see if I can get the point right. Got it right. That QR code in the top right. I'm rocking the Casa hat. Rocco's rocking the Casa hat. Jack took a marketing class. He's rocking the Isles House hat. Go to the store, check it out, buy some merch if you want to support us. Down below, we see Rust and Gold, the fine folks at Rust and Gold in Huntington. If you're looking for a great bar for good food, great drinks, an incredible atmosphere, check out the fine folks at Rust and Gold. And of course, down below, patreon.com/Isles House. You want access to the Discord. You want access to insider information. You want the best Islanders community on the internet. $5 a month. Check us out. patreon.com/Isles House. Jackie recaps. Go ahead.
Pretty easy. Two games in which the Islanders faced 3-goal deficits. One game they came back in, one game they did not. Tonight really felt like it was a little bit of a learning lesson, right? I mean, can't just keep on coming out and finding yourself in 2-3-goal deficits and expect to win. Simple as that sometimes, but the only thing I find a little bit concerning is, yes, they dominated the third period, and kind of since, I would say, maybe the halfway point in the game, but I feel like Patrick Waugh shortened his bench extremely aggressively and early tonight. So, you know, the Flames are coming in tomorrow and it's almost like they're not concerned. And that kind of does scare me a little bit because we know this team's MO, right? I mean, it's play up and down to competition. And something I meant to do before the show that I'm going to do now, when you guys give your spiel, I need to know this team's record as a betting favorite versus a betting underdog this season, because it might be one of the craziest things.
Rocco, you're muted. That is a good question, Jack. Now that Rocco's unmuted, I'll see if I can find that.
I'm going on right now.
They're their betting favorite. I don't pay attention to it. Have they been losing like every game when they're the favorite?
Yeah, and as the underdog, they win like every time.
Were we the underdog the last few?
Oh my goodness. I cannot believe the ATS history with this team. It's actually crazier than I thought.
Well, hold on. ATS or money line? Because ATS for hockey is the puck line, Jack.
Okay, but straight up is pretty crazy too.
Okay, so read the straight up.
Straight up, the Islanders are 11-11 as a betting favorite this season. As an underdog, they are 26-16.
Wow. That is incredible, actually.
That's a stat. Wow.
That's crazy. I didn't even realize that was a thing until you just brought it up, quite honestly.
That they have to be the most profitable underdog this year.
On the puck line, they're 31-11 on the puck line.
But forget puck line, Jack. You know better. I
know. They're probably like minus like 300 on those, but still, that's pretty crazy. What this team really does go up and down with it.
They're also the best team to live bet, apparently. Just every time they go down 2 goals, give them a go.
And yeah.
Tonight they made it a 1-goal game so early too. I had the strong feeling they were going to actually come back. Obviously they didn't, but they dominated the third. Polar opposite of the first.
They played well in the second too, I thought.
Yeah, they got some momentum in the second, and I thought. And honestly, early parts of the first, I didn't think they were that bad. They just kind of, they have these bad breakdowns. Like, I remember in the game against St. Louis, even the fourth goal that obviously didn't end up counting for St. Louis, it was like 2-on-1s, 2-on-0s, breakaways. Like, they've had these odd breakdowns as of late, and they just got to clean it up. Just mental mistakes.
I feel like they've had it all season, but they've been getting such spectacular goaltending that even when it takes this much of a you know, this much of regression, that it really shows. And even tonight when they started to dominate play, there were a few times where there were guys wide open in the slot. There was even a couple of breakaways. Something with Sorokin, once they go down 2-3 goals, he really locks it down.
It does feel like when their back's against the wall and he knows they can't, like, they can't let up one more, it's over. He kind of, he definitely is able to lock in. He made a few in the third, like you said. I think there was one with like 4 or 5 minutes left. I want to say it was on Kempe, like point blank save. And it would have been over had he scored, but wow, yeah. I mean, he's been awesome. And I think you posted this, Jack. I'm genuinely annoyed that you have, I think it was the NHL Twitter, anointing Vasilevsky the favorite for the Vezina.
I saw that. I don't
even see how it's close.
I'll pull it up.
How is it even close? What does Vasilevsky have right now that could put him above Sorokin?
Nothing. Honestly, it's a Kucherov stat.
Right?
Is he a Kuch merchant?
He might be a Kuch merchant.
Which, I'll get it up.
Pause.
I couldn't believe it when NHL, like, they posted him a good bit ahead of Sorokin too. Someone was saying wins, they value wins too much, which is, that's bullshit. Come on.
We need the nerds. That's what we need.
We need the nerds. And we also need some people to wake up and just stop anointing guys.
Yeah, because of pretty much. Namesake.
Vasilevsky's great. He's always been great, but this is not a Vasilevsky year. This should be Sorokin's year.
I'm not sure why the image looks like this, but it doesn't look great.
Well, we have the right setup. There we go. Hold on. Let's try this. There we go.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Our tech guy over here. But this has to be – I almost want to like DM one of the analytics guys to see which goalies have had this good of seasons. Like even in the top – to be even in the top five is pretty – is remarkable. Top 10 is great, but number one with those chances against, that's just insane. This guy is having a ridiculous season. And
well, I said it last podcast and I'll say it again. I said it in our Discord. We're not appreciating the season that Ilya Sorokin is having. And even if he regresses from, I mean, he's having a generational season.
Yeah.
It might be a little hyperbolic, but like walk with me here.
He is.
Even a regression to very good, this team is outside of the playoffs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't think enough people realize that.
Tonight, I felt like that. Like,
and it could be a problem for next year.
I thought he was great tonight, but I didn't think he was, like, insane. Like, when he's not insane, like, they're going to give up 3 goals. It's just the way – it's just how they play. They have these breakdowns all the time. It was interesting to me to see Susie's ice time like really cut tonight. Like, and it was bad because in the third period he actually did take a shift, and it was one of the few that they just spent in the zone the entire time.
Yeah, I think they're double shifting the guys that actually could provide some offense too, though. So that's why Susie, like, when you're down going into the period, you're down 3-1, you felt like you had some momentum, so you just throw out all, like, Schaefer played, I think he got close to 29, or did he end up getting 29 minutes? He played a crazy amount of time. Pellick was out there a lot. Tony D got a lot of run too, and I thought Tony D looked good tonight. He was dancing on him a bit.
Agreed.
But you said it before we hopped on, Jack. He really shortened the bench, and I mean those guys gave their best effort, but it just can't happen every single night where we go down 3-0 or 2-0 in the first and we're playing catch up, because it quite literally gets exhausting. I mean, you ask your best players to play so much, and now we have a back-to-back Calgary tomorrow. We got to play a game with Riddick in net, which he hasn't looked as sharp as he did early in the season. So listen, I'm still confident they could win. Calgary's not the greatest team. I feel like this team does a good job of responding when they really.
No, but they also lost to Calgary last time. And also
Coronado had a couple goals, I think, right?
Yeah. Before I make my point, maybe we should do a little exercise. Should we each just go around and say one positive thing about the Islanders so that people on Twitter don't shit their diaper?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. The New York Islanders are fun. Jack, say something nice about the Islanders.
Go ahead, Jack. You go.
As a team or player?
Anything.
Just the team.
The team. The New York Islanders play faster than I've ever seen them play.
Okay. Rocco, say something nice about the Islanders.
Well, I'm actually going to go to the crowd and the fans. At one point tonight when they were really buzzing, probably like 6-7 minutes left in the game, that standing O, I got a little FOMO not being at the game. You know what I mean? Like they were buzzing.
Crowd, me too.
Standing O, they were starting to come back. I was like, fuck, I wish I was at this game right now. It's good atmosphere.
All right. Great. All right. So we all said something positive about the Islanders.
Here we go. What's Ethan going to do now?
So the Islanders got throttled by the Ducks. They got throttled by the Kings. They went to overtime against the Sharks. It took a miraculous comeback to beat the Blues and then once again lose to the Kings. This is unsustainable in the playoffs.
Yes, but we got
because in the playoffs you're going to be playing good teams, and good teams are not going to let you routinely make comebacks down 3-0.
Of course not.
The other unsustainable part is just relying on the same guys every single night. I wanted to look it up during the game. I'm not going to look it up now. This is something that I would ask Dom for. I need to know.
He hasn't posted his nerd stats, by the way.
Yeah, so he's out at a bar.
He's
enjoying
at the game.
Life.
He was at the game.
Classic.
He's at the game.
Oh, he was at the game. Okay.
He was at the game.
So, maybe he'll get home and give us the stats, but I need to know how many 5-on-5 goals the Islanders have scored without Barzal on the ice for the last like 8 weeks, because I'm telling you right now, that number is going to be insanely low.
Yeah. I mean, it's a different team with him on the ice and him off.
He's been carrying.
Yeah.
But like the thing is it's almost a complete zero. Like pretty much is a complete zero. Like,
well, listen, for those who are listening and you haven't figured it out yet, this entire team runs through Barzal, Horvat, Schaefer, and Sorokin. That's it.
Yeah. Pelech helps. Pelech, I would put it at 5. Yeah.
Okay. But like, listen, you can be excellent defensively, but if you're not putting up points, then.
No, right.
Yeah. It's great, but you're not, you know, like, you have to score goals to win. And the only guys that are consistently productive, Barzal, Horvat, Schaefer, and Sorokin. That's it. I mean,
honestly,
Emil Heineman, before tonight, Emil Heineman had 2 goals in 19 games.
D'Angelo is one of the most consistent offensive players easily on this team right now.
I agree.
He gets points all the time, yeah. Like one way or another, with Barzal, though. So,
and
it's also with him.
Lapses defensively as much as of late, at least. I haven't seen many plays where I'm like, God damn it, Tony D, what the fuck was that? Like, there haven't been many of those.
There haven't.
I don't remember. Last 5-6 games, like post-Olympics, I don't remember one.
No, he's been excellent, honestly, for what like was expected of him and how much he's paid. Like, he has been an excellent deal for the Islanders the second they signed him. But I don't even know what to do with this bottom six, middle six right now.
It's really bad. I don't have Dom's nerd stats for this game, but looking at last game against the Blues, shot attempt share percentage. Braden Schenn, worst on the Islanders, 32.1. Second worst is Andre Palat at 42.1. So
Palat, that's someone I wanted to discuss. They seem to be shrinking his minutes now, and he seems to be off like that top six grind. And honestly, I like the way he plays defensively. I think he's strong on the boards, but this is who he is at this point. And I wouldn't, as fans, get frustrated with him, because this is what we signed up for. We literally took a draft pick to acquire this player. So I don't really know what was expected, but there's been a lot of Palat slander I've seen. So I just don't know what you – I guess my thing is I just don't know what you expected. So for expectations, I think he's been what we got. And has he scored since that first Rangers game?
He has not. And just like to, like, for posterity purposes, I searched just Palat on Twitter earlier today, and my own tweet popped up from December 15th, 2025. It was a quote tweet of an Elliot Friedman 32 Thoughts quote about the Devils have had a couple deals vetoed. I don't know who, I don't know what, but I do believe that happened. There's too much noise out there for that not to have occurred. And I quote tweeted that saying, Palat and Hamilton being the reason you couldn't trade for Quinn Hughes is very funny. So I don't know what people were expecting in acquiring Andre Palat, who is having the worst year of his career. Right now, it seems like his minutes are being diminished for Brayden Schenn, who is being plopped on power play one and who has been absolutely useless since his acquisition. So this is a team that, when you're talking about depth contributing offensively, it is the depth that they already had. It's J.G. Pageau. It's Anders Lee. It's Emile Heinemann. It's those guys. That Cal Ritchie, like, these are the guys that you're relying on for production down the stretch, not the guys that you took on cap hits and lit draft picks on fire for.
You know what never made sense to me, too? Like, new system under Wah. We're playing with speed. You kind of feel like we need guys with speed to play properly in the system.
And trade for old and slow.
Look at all three guys. And again, we're not nitpicking each trade. We're not going back to all that. But, like, look at the three acquisitions. Soucy, slow. Palat, slow. Schenn, maybe a little faster than those other two, but not the fleetest of foot. So
you got bodied on that second goal.
You didn't actually acquire much speed, and then we kind of act surprised when maybe they struggle or at least start to struggle a bit. But yeah, I think my main thing with the lines, like today I saw a lot of people, you guys know me, I'm not usually a complainer of the lines before the game starts, but today, like, just keep Barzal and Horvat together. I feel like we constantly try.
Cost them the game.
We constantly try to separate them and think it'll bring better balance. Like, we know it works with them. Find the third guy that works with them, and let's just go forward and figure out the rest. Like, I think that should be a staple. Barzal next to Horvat, and then the rest could kind of be shuffled if needed. But those two, I think, should not be separated because, as we said, those are the top players on this team, and you feel like when they're apart, they don't have an equivalent on another line that could kind of run with them, if that makes sense. Like, when Barzal's with – who was he with to start? Schenn and Palat? That's borderline disrespect.
It was the practice lines.
You know what it is.
Who did he start with? He didn't start with Horvat tonight.
No, he started with Schenn and Palat. You're correct. Right? Maybe Heinemann? No, Heinemann was with Ritchie and Horvat.
I know. I think Zoe in the chat just said this. I actually agree with this. Try Ritchie with Barzal and Horvat. That's kind of how I felt. Why not? Try to get Ritchie going a little bit. If you're going to play him on the wing, throw him with them.
I will say tonight a couple of times, Brayden Schenn's on power play one. He's on the 6-on-5. He takes the takes the pass, and it's on the 6-on-5. He rips a slapper, and he fans on it. And it's once again, like, this was my fear with the trade in general is – Brayden Schenn is a good player if you play him in the right spot, and that is as a third-line center. No, it is. Ethan, he could be a good third-line center, but the issue is with every player...
Is he a better third-line center than J.G. Pageau?
Right now, yeah. No, he is.
He is not.
They're different.
I agree. So my point being is that, once again, you're expecting a guy to do something that he hasn't done. He wasn't even on the St. Louis Blues power play one or two unit. He comes here to a playoff team, and he's the guy that's ripping slappers at the end of the game. Question, we've been insane 6-on-5 this season. Who did they take off to put him on the unit? Why did they do that? Holmstrom?
Holmstrom or Heinemann? It's got to be a lefty.
I think it was Simon. And, you know, as much as I've been wrong about Simon, I haven't really been complaining over the last couple months.
Jack, was it Drouin?
No.
I think it was the beginning of the year. He was.
When he was playing well, he was on it. But Holmstrom was that guy, and he made a couple of passes that led to goals on the 6-on-5 unit. So I really didn't love that. I don't love the way they're deploying him. When I looked at the lines this morning, I'm sorry, I can't control my instincts, but when you have Barzal next to Palat and Schenn, it rubs me very, very wrong. Like, don't make it that obvious, man. Just play the guys where they're supposed to play and try to win the game. Give your team the best chance to win the game, not to make yourselves look like geniuses.
Yeah, they got a little cute with the lines tonight.
They got cute. And
tried to get too cute. Can't get cute in the NHL. Got to win games.
Another talking point. So they've played Shabanov the last couple games, and I like it. So Shabanov in the first period tonight makes the pass over to Gatcombe, and Gatcombe can't finish it. Just a question for you boys. Do you think if it wasn't Gatcombe and it was Anthony Duclair, do you think that 2-on-1 converts to a goal? I know. No. I get it. My point being is when you add guys like Shen and Palat, you're adding the elements that you are looking for, that you've emphasized so much for your fourth line to be. You don't need the fourth line to still be that. You can have them try to add a little bit of offense to this team. So I really think to add a little bit more skill and maybe just a goal here and there, you add Shabanov and Duclair back to this lineup as regulars with Cizikas, and instead of checking and defending, you actually try to score a goal or two against the other team's worst lines instead of this like 2006 mentality down there.
Yeah.
What are your guys' thoughts on that?
I agree.
Ethan, don't give a shit, huh?
Agree as well. You know what, Jack? Unlike you, I mute my microphone when I'm typing so that people don't have to hear.
Right. Fair enough. Fair enough.
That's what I was doing before. And then you got to remember to take it off mute, too. Because I was typing up something before, and then I got
caught. Should we talk about Shabanov real quick?
Yeah. Short King Spring is coming. He should improve. But, I mean, I thought last – who did we play before this game? I can't
Blues.
Remember. The Blues. He looked good against the Blues, I thought.
He did. Here's my thing.
That much. I didn't think he did much.
Here's the thing. Hold on. We may have some advanced stats. I just lost it on my Twitter timeline. But my issue with Shabanov is I've made a promise to myself not to get fooled by whatever these last two games have been since he's been back in the lineup. Because, yes, he's looked better, but the flaws are still the same. He's too small to be successful in the NHL. Here, we got a game score breakdown. Interesting. This is from Hockey Stat Cards. Any guess who the bottom three forwards were?
Bottom three forwards.
Game score breakdown.
Gakon?
No.
Palat?
No.
Pageau?
Yes to Rocco, no to Jack. The bottom three, Braden Schenn, -1.04. Max Shabanov, -1.07. Cal Ritchie, -1.51.
Ritchie didn't have a great game.
Any guesses who obviously if you're a defenseman, who the bottom two defensemen game score?
Soucy and Mayfield.
Soucy and Pulock. Mayfield was third.
I actually thought Pulock was okay. I mean, I don't remember if it was his fault on either of the early goals, but he looked good in the third, Palak. He was pinching a little bit. He had his chances. Palak overall this year.
Let me see if I can put this up here real quick. There it is.
Attaboy, Heinemann. Nice to see him get going a little bit.
The two insane tips. Pause. Yeah.
We need him a little bit. We need him.
We need him a lot.
We need him a lot, but just throw in a goal every now and then. Like every 3-4 games, we need a goal from you, pal. I want to tweet the tweet, you know?
Yeah, I know. You had two chances tonight.
I tweeted it. But when you're down 3-0, it doesn't hit the same, obviously.
I wonder how they're feeling on Soucy internally.
Probably bad.
Like I think he's really started to unimpress this coaching staff. I've noticed a couple of times he's getting replaced on shifts, even in the game before this one.
Hold on, let's take a look at this real quick. When did they trade for Soucy?
January something.
He was the first, yeah.
It was that home and home against the Rangers in late January.
Was his first game against the Rangers?
Yeah, at home. Yeah. And then he scored the next game at the Garden.
Okay, so this would have been late January, correct? Because they played the Rangers in a back-to-back, the 28th and the 29th. They won both. So if I'm not mistaken, the entire goal, according to Matthew Darche, of acquiring Carson Soucy was to take some of the load off of Matthew Schaefer. Am I speaking correctly here?
Yeah, who looked exhausted by the end of the game.
I think he meant that in a certain way. I think Soucy was brought in.
PK.
PK. It's all about PK. Nerd stats are up according to Data Down, if you need.
So after that acquisition, Matthew Schaefer played both Ranger games, 24-36, 23-25, and then against Nashville, he played 23-25, identical. Since February 3rd, Matthew Schaefer has played 28 minutes, 24 minutes, 25 minutes, 25 minutes, really 26 minutes and 25 and a half minutes. He played 27 against the Kings, almost 28. He played 29 against the Sharks and almost 27 and a half against St. Louis.
It's because we're down every game. You literally can't not play him. Like, I'm watching tonight. There was one point, I think there was like 3 minutes left, and Pelech jumped over the bench. I was like, no, give me Schaefer. Because he was having such good shifts. He had like a little extra jump tonight, which is something when it comes to him, because he has it all the time. But he had some spin moves. He was going around. He was orbiting the zone. He just looked awesome. There's nothing that gets me going right now more watching an Islander game than like the little drop passes to and from
Barzell. They're just circling.
Oh, my God. It's like Barzell was doing it by himself for so long, and now he has this guy, and he's probably like, this is fucking sick.
Yeah, no, there was a point where even when we were losing, it was really fun to watch that entire, like, 6 minutes. And it was all, but I was kind of like, where has this been the whole – where has this been? Why does this only happen at the end of the game? Like, there's not many points in the first 40 minutes where they're doing that.
No, but, you know, again, we've talked about it. What feels like forever. We've talked about it since we started this pod. We talked about it today. They have like a distinct, like top five, top six players. And then it kind of drops off after that. Yeah. That's where, again, it wasn't just about the Shen trade on its own, but the totality of the Islander situation that bothered me, and that we needed to add to the core. We need another core piece. We're going to be a team that makes a run.
By the way,
another skill guy. That's what.
Okay. All right. Hold on real quick.
Yeah.
I asked Dom for the nerd stats in our Discord. Dom is probably drinking. He's out. But he's in the chat right now.
I see it, yeah.
There it is. Islanders have 18 5v5 goals in their last 10 games. Horvat, Barzell, Schaefer have been on for 11 of them. What did I say earlier?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. Yeah, I really feel like, again, we can name whatever player was available, but If that extra guy was out there during those shifts where we're dominating possession, we have it in the offensive zone for 2 to 3 minutes at a time, you feel like you could make something happen. But it goes from Barzell, Horvat, Schaefer, and then you literally feel the drop-off when it goes to another guy's stick.
You know what we debated earlier in the season? And I think I win this debate, Ethan. This team misses this team misses Kyle Palmieri a lot. They do. Oh.
Jack, let me tell you something. I'm struggling to come up with a specific example right now, but someone posted something on Twitter. It was just like, oh, you know, so-and-so is the team's 2C. And I think Rocco remembers what I'm talking about. And I'm just like, that's not a good thing.
Right.
If this team is missing 35-year-old Kyle Palmieri, it's not a good thing.
It's not. But they miss him.
He's supposed to be a chip-in guy, right? Like Kyle Palmieri, like what Heinemann did tonight, like that's what we'd want from Kyle Palmieri. Like have a game where, you know, maybe we're down or we need a goal and you make the big play and get us back in the game. Like to me, that should be Palmieri's role more so than like get us over the top and win us a game on your own. Like he's a chip-in player, if you will.
Just the goals have been so hard to come by, man.
Yeah, we've missed him because if he's back, who would we knock out of the lineup? You know, probably like a Shabanov type guy or Duclair type guy. All these mediocre guys that are so inconsistent, one of them would be out of the lineup or would be rotating who's out of the lineup. So, yeah, obviously Palmieri would help. But I think to Ethan's point, like if Palmieri's the savior, that's the issue. Like most good teams can survive losing a Kyle Palmieri.
Yeah, no, I mean, we have survived. But
survived, but I'm saying like it's not – like, it isn't it? You're right. Like, we do need that guy that could just chip in 20, 25 goals in a year. But if you look at Carolina, you look at Tampa Bay, like, they would drop a guy like that, not even blink.
That is true. I think we can get to some questions.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's get into them. Of course, it's my idea. Didn't have the channel going. So we begin now. LI Isles / Mets 94. I'm just wondering, did you guys know the cap is going up? And how is the mentorship for Cal? And Jack, you better be wearing a hat.
Hey, Jack. Let's go. Let's go, Jack.
Let's go. The mentorship program is getting a little bit tiresome. You can have a tutor come over for an hour, pay them a little bit, they leave, not trade a million assets for them and constantly make it about that. When you're making $6.5 million, production is important. And this constant, well, it's great for Richie. It honestly does kind of offend me because I think Bo Horvat, Barzell, Anders Lee, J.G. Pageau are more than capable of it. And this
Pollock, Sorokin.
This whole leadership angle is really kind of rubbing me the wrong way also, because I'm speaking for the players that are already in that dressing room. Like, I think they were capable leadership wise and intangible wise as it was. Sure, maybe they get a few extra hits and maybe there's some more protection for Schaefer, which I do think is important, but protection for Schaefer doesn't need to cost that amount of money.
But it's also not. It's bullshit. Like,
okay, you know what? The whole thing is bullshit.
Bro, goals, Braden Shen points, at the age of 36 is not fucking chucking mitts with some 6'5", with Hellenius.
Yeah, that's a miss. Yeah, I don't think
honestly, Braden Shen going to the Sharks bench and saying, anyone takes a run at him, there's going to be problems. The Sharks are like this young bullshit team. Like, good for you, dude. Honestly, the Islanders are turning, like, they're trying to convince us that the Islanders are turning into the big brothers and big sisters of America, where every single young player needs to be paired up with, like, multiple adults, like, their problem children that are going to, like, go off the rails unless they have proper guidance. It's ridiculous.
The whole thing is really over, it's really overemphasized. And like, when you really think about it, like, I think they were capable. I think they were more than capable.
You know what they're going to do, Jack? If the Islanders ever make round, like, an Eastern Conference final or Stanley Cup, they're actually going to pause the game like they did for Ovechkin. They're going to roll out a red carpet, and they're going to let Braden Shen personally coach Cal Ritchie through what he just did wrong and how to improve. That's what they're going to do.
It's too much for me, man.
I'm picturing Schaefer and Cal Ritchie how I was as a kid, like, in your grandmother's Italian basement, she's cooking pasta, and all your aunts and uncles are asking you the same goddamn question over and over and over. How's school? How you doing? How's baseball? How's this? How's that? And Cal and Schaefer just rolling their eyes. Yeah, it's fine. Over and over and over again. That's the vision I'm getting after this conversation.
Can I say something that's going to be poorly received?
No. Next question.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. We'll skip that for the bad PR. Sam,
excitement. That's a clip. That's a clip, by the way. 5 seconds.
And Jack, good job. Good job doing a mini screen before the next question. I see you. Good
there
job.
We go. Yeah, you got to skip some of that stuff. Sam, excitement level on a scale of 1 to 10 for each of these guys if they come over to Bridgeport this year / next year. Victor Eklund, Cole Iserman, Quinn Finley, Danny Nelson, Daniil Prokhorov, and Kayshon Aitchison.
Let's do one at a time. 1 to 10 on Eklund each.
Probably a 7.
I'll go 8. Ethan?
If the excitement level, if they come over to Bridgeport.
Just the excitement. I
kind of feel you on that, Ethan.
6.
Hamilton, by the way.
Yeah, whatever, 6.
Cole Iserman.
7.
8.
I'm high. The other guys are probably going to go a little lower than Iserman, but I just gave – I'm not putting anyone as high as Eklund, and I gave him an 8. Now I'm excited about Iserman. I think too many people are writing off Iserman. His best skill is the hardest thing to do in the game, and his best skill is what we've been missing for
years. The reason people are writing him off is because they're not sure if his game's going to translate, because he's not the most fleet of foot. He's not the most defensively responsible, but his shot 100% will translate.
His shot, he's the best. He has the best shot of probably any Isles prospect I've seen.
You know what I've noticed? I kind of like these draft rankings of all these players. I like the earlier ones than the later ones when people try to outsmart everybody. For example, like James Higgins.
I got lost in that.
I just feel like when we're further away from these drafts and like before they are drafted, like those initial rankings, as opposed to now after they're in school and everybody's trying to pick apart every piece of film that they're watching. Like I saw it with James Hagans, like he was projected number one overall. Now he's eighth. He went seventh or eighth. I don't know, but I feel like he's going to be a damn good player and better than a lot of the players in that draft class. And I just feel like the drafting world and the prospect experts and all of them, I just think that their initial thoughts are a lot more valuable than when we get down the line here. So I feel the same level of excitement I felt before whatever season he just had. Like he is what I think they said he was when the Islanders took him, which was a steal in the draft, and he's got very good potential to be a goal scorer. I'm not going to get lost in one season at BU.
And not only that, like when you're draft, I think he went 20th overall. When you're drafting 20th, I don't mind taking a home run swing. Like I'd rather, especially with the state of the New York Islanders right now, I'd rather take a home run swing and hope you could get a 30 goal scorer than kind of play it safe and end up with a solid third line bottom six guy. Like take your swings because it's hard to find these guys and it's hard to acquire these guys. So take your chances. I hope they do the same thing with the pick this year. God willing, they keep it, but just take a swing. Like we need a stud. It's easy to find third liners, fourth liners, bottom pair defensemen. It's hard to find first liners and top pair D. So take your swings. I like the pick.
I guess my point is like those guys that fly up the draft boards like really close to the draft and their stock rises really quickly. Those are the guys I want nothing to do with. Like that Frondell guy. Like
yes and no. Yes and no.
Zach Wilson is always the guy I think of in that situation. Like the Mac Joneses in the first round.
Let's not dive into the Jets.
All right. Come on. Quinn Finley.
5. 7.
I'm going to give him an 8 also.
That's insane.
Hell yeah.
I don't think it's insane.
All right. Next.
See, like a good co-host would ask, well, why do you think that's not insane?
No, let's hear it. Let's hear why you're excited.
Things I don't need to hear about.
Because that. He's a point per game player at Wisconsin, which is like a toxic program for offense. So if he is put into Rocky Thompson's system with other talented guys, I think he's going
to. And then you give Eklund a 7?
Yeah, because I think he's small.
Scale sucks, bro.
No, it doesn't.
Yes, it does.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, it does.
How about How about we make a bet? Well, the problem with this bet is that there is a good enough chance.
You seem confident.
No. I'm just saying there's a good enough chance that Eklund makes the big roster next year.
At some point, not right away, I don't think.
Okay. If Finley and Eklund are both in Bridgeport, you and I should make a bet on point per game.
Fine.
My God. You cleaned up on our bet, but man, that's a good.
Not only did I clean up on your bet, but I'm closing in on Kyle on the Palat bet.
Wait, what's the Palat bet?
Palat versus Tsiplikov total points.
How many dude Tsiplikov scored the other night?
I know. And for some reason, Kyle agreed to not count Palat's first game to even up the total games remaining for both players.
Exactly.
And so Palat had 2 assists that game. And he had a goal and assist. What did he have? His first game is 9 under. Goal and assist. So he had 2 points. And since then he only has 2 points. So with Tiplikov's goal, I have closed the gap by 100%.
Holmstrom versus Sip was the tortoise versus the hare. This is the tortoise versus the tortoise here.
Yeah, exactly.
This is an unbelievable bet. I will begin tracking myself. The next one is Danny Nelson.
6.
Daniil Prokhorov.
10.
7.
7. Kayshon Aitchison.
6.
Yeah, 6.
1.
What?
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. You have Pelech and Schaefer on this.
You've updated Dom too much, bro.
No, you have Pelech. You have Pelech and Schaefer on this unit. You have a team that's bad at defense, and all anyone ever talks.
It's not about who you have. It's just the prospect himself.
All right, come on. Yeah,
go ahead.
30 goals isn't exactly what I'm looking for. In the OHL, I kind of rather. I just don't. I'm not buying
OHL too.
Just not buying the whole thing. Okay, Steve 1473. Do you guys think the Islanders have a better chance at beating Carolina or Buffalo/Tampa Bay?
Am I crazy to say Carolina?
No, I agree with you.
I think, again, we have to get there. But if we actually it would probably be, I guess, the second round. But if we actually got to face Carolina this season, I can't fully explain why. Maybe it's simply just Matthew Schaefer. But I feel like we'd have as good a chance as any time that we've ever played them to beat them. Because
I mean, I think all three throttle us.
I don't know.
Maybe Buffalo. Tampa would throttle us.
Tampa does, I'm saying. Tampa would kill us, I think.
Just going to put this in here. I think that, let's see.
Are we doing bad radio?
No, yeah, we are. Because I was going to pull up. I was going to pull up Carolina's lineup real quick. Roster for roster. The Islanders have as much talent as that team. Yeah, like Aho and Jarvis, good first line. But when you're looking at their team, Stankoven's a really young second line center, and he's actually really struggled this season. I'm a little surprised they didn't pick up anyone else at the deadline. They're better defensively, of course, but the Islanders have like a goalie playing at a crazy, crazy level. I think the Islanders can actually take them this year. I think they're a little bit – I think, you know, when you're constantly there at that number one spot, nobody even questions you. But I've watched some of their games recently, and something is off. And the way that Brind'Amour plays with those guys, like, it's a system that will wear you down. And I just think that I think the fatigue might be starting to hit them a little bit. I can see the Islanders making that a series. The other two, I'll be honest, Buffalo, I think, would work us like Buffalo's badly.
Good. And Buffalo's big and Buffalo's tough. Like, honestly, Buffalo can make a run. I think Buffalo can be anyone in the East.
Yeah, they can. I mean,
the reason I think Carolina, like, we kind of have a shot against Carolina more so than the others. I feel like if you go back to the playoff series, we lost to them. Like, we just couldn't break down that wall. Like, we couldn't – like, their system would just break us down and lull us to death, and it would just be like Barzal couldn't get in. And now you send down, like, Barzal and Schaefer, and you feel like you have guys that could sort of break them down, get their chances. Like, if you go back to those playoff series, us versus them, they were some of the most boring games. Like, 2-1, then the Hurricanes protect the house, and that's that. Like, very boring. Just they throw shots at the net. Sorokin wasn't performing well that one series. Like, just not fun hockey to watch per se, especially compared to the other series. But I don't know. I just feel like we'd have a shot this time.
I have to say about Buffalo, do you remember like those first – when teams haven't made the playoffs in a long time, they usually get in as like an 8 seed, and they're usually around the most energetic fans, and they usually are good to steal a game or two just from the adrenaline of being in the playoffs. The thing that's really dangerous about them is their team is going to have that mentality, and they're also just a wagon. Like, whoever plays them in the first round is eliminated.
I was worried they were going to make that big ad at the deadline, and then they would be crazy. Like, imagine if they got Robert Thomas and didn't give up much off their current roster.
Be
nuts.
Yeah, they'd be nasty.
Yeah. All right. Next question. We can move on. Mike, how are you guys dealing with all the online pushback? I find that sometimes the unrelenting optimist is sadly the most nasty and negative towards the other fans. Did Lou Burnout warp reality?
Tell you how I'm dealing with it, Mike, and I won't speak for my co-hosts. How I'm dealing with it is I don't give a fuck because I've been podcasting for a decade and I don't adjust my personal opinions to what random burners and people with 5 followers have to say on the Bird app. I am authentic. I give my honest take. Sometimes I am right, sometimes I am wrong. And we live in a take economy where you don't listen for Jackie recaps to just do an hour of this is what happened. You listen because you want to hear our opinions and hopefully we entertain you. So there are some folks out there that operate on random burners from their mother's basement. As you can see, this is clearly my own basement, not my mother's basement. Yeah, I don't care.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I can appreciate the people that disagree but can have a conversation. It's the people like, no, you're wrong. No, you're so pessimistic, whatever else. Like, I had plenty of people, whether it's through our pod page or message me through Discord or a friend text me, whatever. Like, some of my best friends disagree with my takes, but it doesn't mean – you know, one is right, one is wrong all the time. Like, everyone's going to have takes. People are going to be right and wrong. And it's just, you know, everyone feels that they, something we say each time we record has to be criticized. That's fine. Like, we can take it. We're used to it. But at the end of the day, as Ethan said, we're going to be our authentic selves. So I think majority of people would rather us be authentic than give these cookie cutter takes, because when we started this podcast, we had a discussion and we literally said, we want to be honest. We think there's too much cookie cutter hockey podcasts out there already. We want to be different. We want to be like three guys sitting at a bar discussing hockey together. And I feel like that's what we are. I feel like people have taken to it. And if you don't like it, it's fine. And if you didn't like our last episode, but still appreciate us as a podcast, that's greatly appreciated as well. But we're just going to continue giving our takes because that's who we are. And I think if I'm listening to a podcast, I appreciate honesty versus just giving an answer for the sake of it.
Well, the way I'm dealing with it, I told somebody that they should turn on Toy Story if they want to feel fuzzy the other day. Other than that, I did get a DM, longtime follower, listener to the pod since day one. Never heard you so negative. Shit was deflating. That's how you know it was a tough move. It's been a little bit weird because I'm usually on the optimistic side of literally everything. Yeah. But the thing is like there are times where I do feel a very opposite way. Like, I've criticized Patrick Waugh. I've criticized the general manager now. I don't love either of them, but that doesn't still take away. I want to see the players succeed, but I just feel like the guys who acquired them and who deploy them are not putting them in the greatest position. And as you guys said, honesty is what's most important here. And the second part of the question is interesting. I thought, did Lou burnout warp reality? It 100% has. And that's my thing. Everybody is just so happy that Lou Lamoriello is gone and that there's like this fresh face in the organization. There's videos of Darsh hanging up the phone while he's making this trade with Braden Schenn. And it's like the On the Island podcast, and everybody is so fired up about all these other things that Lou should have been doing to at least a certain extent. However, just like making moves to make moves is, I just disagree with that. Like, we just added $13 million in forwards and gave up assets for two guys that will be happy if they combine for 6 goals before the end of the season. So I fully, it's been different because, you know, the optimists are, they are something else. The blind optimism to literally everything. I call that delusion. Scuds, will this team ever take Heinemann and Pulott out of the top 6?
Not this year. I don't think they have the. I don't think they have the players to right.
You want Cizikas in there?
Pulott will. Heinemann, no. Heinemann just bought himself another. He'll be there till the end of the season. He's going to be stapled now up there, which is fine. I mean, he scored 2 goals. Some nice tips tonight from him. I thought he played really well, other than just the goals.
Played well. He actually almost walked Doughty. Doughty got so lucky. Had him turned around. And do you remember that play in the third? He had Doughty turned around and he went to make that move and hit the back of his skate.
Yeah.
He was feeling it tonight. He was good.
Yeah, he also made like a nice pass, which is something that we haven't seen in a little bit. So
he plays a good 200-foot game. That's why I never get that upset at him.
I do think Palat's starting to make his way down the lineup here a little bit.
He's a bottom sixer. That's where he is.
Speaking of optimists, Mr. Rob Taub is wondering, Cal Ritchie, 20 goals next year, expectation or delusion? I'm happy to take this one. This is absolutely delusional, and this is a product of fans who have not watched a team that has 20-year-olds, 21-year-olds, 18-year-olds in the lineup for years and years to just put that on him. Like, you need to hit 20 goals or else what, dude? This kid's 21. He's making great plays on the power play. He plays fast. He plays smart. I don't know if he's going to be a great goal scorer in this league per se, but no. I just think you want to see incremental improvement, probably up until, you know, that age 22, 23 season, you want to see him take a step.
Yeah, I could see it being I would probably predict under 20, but it's not that I don't think he's going to improve. I think it's more his play, his style of play, rather. Like, I think he's more of the from the school of Barzell, where maybe he passes a little too much, if that makes sense. And he's going to, you know, how many times has Barzell eclipsed 20 goals? Not that many times, right? Once, twice?
That's a Google.
Whatever it is. It's just, I'm not saying it because I don't think Cal Ritchie will have a solid season. I think he's going to be the guy that racks up many more assists than he does goals. Barzell has had two.
Yeah, this is going to be his third, though. He is 18.
Yeah, so it's not that easy. And again, if you're more of a passer, it makes it that much harder to put up 20 goals, especially when you're as young as Richie. It might be – it could be dependent on line mates, too. Like, if we don't improve the top six and we're still that dependent on Barzell and Horvat, it's going to be that much tougher for Richie because he's going to – you know, who's he playing with? Who's he with on that second line that helps him get to 20?
No, all great thoughts. Thomas Boyle, do you see McDavid asking for a trade to play with Schaefer and Sorokin?
No.
He is a part two. Do you think the Islanders will play Pittsburgh or the Columbus Blue Jackets in the first round?
Pittsburgh? I kind of think... you know who I think going to go a little off topic. I think Detroit's not going to make it, and then extra Metro team's going to make it. So I think Columbus, Pittsburgh, and we're going to make it. And I'm going to say, I think it's Pittsburgh. I think it's us versus Pittsburgh, and Columbus is going to get a wild card.
Ethan.
I agree with Rocco. I got to give up on my Caps.
Yeah, they you got me to believe in them a little bit for some reason, but they've mailed it in, man. Let's see. Wanted to get this up here. All right, so here are their most likely playoff matchups per the analytically driven hockeystats.com website. I honestly really think it's going to end up being Columbus or Carolina or Tampa. I don't see Pittsburgh losing that spot the way they've survived without Crosby and Malkin. So
that's frustrating to me, man. Like, they, when Crosby went down, I'm like, all right, we're going to catch them. They're not going to play well. Then Malkin went. The Penguins have been doing this for 20 years. Those two guys go down, they still play well. It's insane.
It's crazy. So I actually think I could see Columbus just seems to – nobody can stop them. It's really kind of bizarre out of nowhere. So I feel like Columbus is eventually going to unfortunately pass us, and I think we actually end in the wild card. As you said, Detroit is in free fall right now, and they don't have Larkin or even their second-line center, Andrew Kopp. So they have 1C JT Compher going right now, and it's not going so well.
And who was their deadline acquisition? Justin Falk. That was
Justin.
I didn't like that move either for them.
But yeah, the Iser plan just bringing on more and more questions.
How many years? It's been like, what is it? Year six of that already, too. Like, ugh.
Yeah. The next question is Ryan 014. How would each of you grade Pulock and Mayfield's season so far? And between Pulock and Mayfield, whether this would be the off season or a few years down the road, who would get moved first? Both have pretty strong trade protection, or do you see both of them finishing their contracts with the Islanders? Both expire in 2030.
Wow. I didn't realize we have a while with both. I think one – it's hard to say who. I think one of them will eventually move just because we'll – either whether it's an influx of youth or signing guys or whatever it may be, I think you'll get to the point where one of them kind of has to move because – how else are you going to improve that right side eventually? I mean, if say you make a signing or you extend Tony D, are we just going to run with this right side the way it is for the next 2-3 years? I think at some point you're going to look to improve. So, and who would maybe I'd say Scotty's more likely to be traded because the cap hits a good bit lower. I think Scotty's easier to move, right? Is that fair?
I think Scott would probably move first because, and I also think they would need to suck. So it's tough. I don't think Pollock's ever waving no matter what. And he's an alternate captain. I don't know if the team would be eager to move him. So I could see Mayfield, if the team gets bad, someone's going to want him. So a contender can add that contract midseason.
I don't know if it's as much of the team as bad. Like, I see one of them, if dealt, being a summer move. Like, say we need that extra little bit of cap. to make what we see as the final acquisition or the big acquisition. I think that's why one would move. More of a summer thing in my mind.
Yeah, I don't think it would be this offseason. And how would I grade? How would you grade their seasons, though?
Stuff like, I mean, Pulak's been better than last year. So with Mayfield, honestly,
I give them both a B.
Yeah, like a B, C plus B is fine.
Yeah. David S., at what positions do you guys see roster turnover next year? Tons of cap space with very little interesting free agents. Unlikely any rookies make the team next year unless we have trades pretty much looking at the same roster. Love having Palat and Shen fill up those roster spots. Parentheses, exclamation point.
Whoops. I think you have to see something in the forward group. I mean, we've said it since the beginning of this episode. Like, it's just not good enough up there. So I think they're going to try to make the big splash up front.
They kind of put themselves in a position where how much turnover can you really have now that you have two guys under contract? So I don't see much, really, to be honest with you. I see very little.
I mean, on the right side D, the one spot you could make an improvement is if Tony walks and you try to get an upgrade there. And offensively, I mean, you got to think Duclair and Chabanov are gone in the summer. Not that those are big needle movers like you're getting any assets, but it opens up the spots. So I could see Duclair and Chab going off and then them kind of having to go after that big fish. But again, we don't know the cost.
Well,
Robert Thomas's of the world, you're going to have to pay. So
a guy I wanted to bring up. So in Vegas, it hasn't been going so well for Rasmus Anderson, and there seems to be a little momentum that he's going to actually hit the UFA market, which I don't think was the plan originally. But when I tell you it's going bad, it's going bad. Like, he's not playing well there.
But if he's not playing well in Vegas, do we want him here? Like, is that not a red flag for you?
So it would be. But when I take a look at Vegas's left-handed defenseman, I see Braden McNabb, Noah Hanifin, and Jeremy Lazan. The best compliment for Rasmus Anderson is not Noah Hanifin at this stage of his career. It's a guy like Adam Pellick. So if you wanted to let D'Angelo walk and then you bring in Rasmus Anderson, that's a pretty big improvement, honestly. Or he could even play with Schaefer when Pulak can go back with Pellick. That's a real upgrade. Look, he's an older guy, but honestly, this regime doesn't seem to give a shit. So that's something that I'm kind of looking at if he doesn't resign.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I would consider it, but I'm definitely not giving him a bag. Like, there's other guys I like. Like, I like Radish better than him.
Yeah. You know what? I forgot about Radish.
Yeah. I mean, and I think we'll end up talking about him a little later because someone tagged me in something I saw, but like the Radish side thing for me too is like, is it Tampa Bay or is it him? Because this is the big outlier season right now.
I mean, he's re-signing in Tampa.
Probably. It's the Financial Four. They usually don't lose guys they want to keep.
But, Financial Four, TM.
TM. But I mean, I don't know what their cap situation looks like. I'd have to look at it a little deeper. But yeah, obviously if it gets close. But it's also, here's the thing too, like, he's not the youngest free agent. I believe he's 29 or 30. So maybe Tampa is like, we're not giving you 8, we'll give you 5. And that's where there could be a bit of a dilemma with their offer versus another team's.
All right. So the next question is the Bri Man. It's a three-parter. What do you think is the better option to improve our top six? A, sign Tuck to a 7x10.511 without giving up assets. B, going for a prized younger trade asset. But having to give up several prime assets.
Oof.
So I basically mean, pay for Tuck or...
Yeah. I mean, it depends who it is. And the value of guys like a Kachuk or a Thomas or a Kyrou is their sign long-term to a, like, what is now going to be a sweetheart deal. Like, I think Kyrou and Thomas make 8. I think Brady Kachuk's around the same. Those guys, like, the beautiful part of acquiring them is their deals too, right? Like, because it's not a huge cap hit. I know Brady needs a new one. I think he's eligible the following summer. But some of these guys that are going to get traded, people don't realize, like, their value is going to be up because of how cheap that cap hit is. Because an 8 mil cap hit is not what it used to be. Like if Tuck's getting 10.5, do you know how good it is to have Thomas at 8.5 for the next 5-6 years? That's a great deal. So I would lean towards the trade. And I like Tuck, but again, I think he's a little bit of an older free agent. I could see him kind of getting paid and then not falling off a cliff. He's a really good player, but I don't know if he's the dynamic guy we need. He's not the fastest. Like we need that. We need more of a Barzell-esque player than we need a Shen or a Lee.
100%. Cause you need to be able to sustain shifts. His part two, what contract are you offering Darren Radish? Rocco and I have discussed higher AAV for six years versus seven. For example, 8.5 and 9 million. I don't know the Bry man. That's
yeah. I would give him a lot of money. I like him, and I would give and definitely give a higher AAV to shorten up the years.
Yeah, I would do it too.
Like if you told me 5x9 gets done, fuck it, just do it. He fills such a big hole for us.
Agreed. Three, if Shabanov plays well this weekend, would you feel comfortable moving him to the top six for Heinemann or Palat?
I mean, he could take Palat's place. I'm fine with that. But like, is Shabanov a long-term fit there? No.
I'd be fine with it. Just try shit.
Don't you already see like him being in the top six and then by the second period, while being like, nah, fuck that. They're in the blender again. He's out.
Yeah. 100%. That's what would happen.
Right.
Hey, Lupo, how do you feel about the fourth line becoming the new identity line? I don't know if this question is sarcastic, but it makes me nauseous. Hey, Lupo. Makes me nauseous. Rusby, thinking long-term, how would you handle the likely Isles log jam at forward next year, assuming they bring back their free agents, Lee, Shabanov, McLean? McLean's gone. And with the return of Palmieri and Engvall, that's 16 guys, not counting other free agents they might sign or any rookies making the team. What are your thoughts on the best approach there?
Well, Duclair and Shabanov, I think, are going to end up out. Duclair, like, most definitely. His trade protection goes to 16 teams. They'll probably work that one out. Engvall, who knows? Like, is Engvall the new guy that's just on LTIR the rest of his career? I don't know, but I think – if he is healthy, they'll probably just waive him and he could go to Hamilton. So they'll find ways for the spots. I'm not super worried about the logjam because when you have a whole offseason to figure out, it's pretty easy. But so, yeah, I think that's just kind of the guys towards the bottom of the lineup are going to go out, and then hopefully they acquire that higher level guy that knocks everyone down spot.
I don't think Lee's going to be back. I don't think Shabanov's going to be back. I don't think McLean. No, not anymore. I don't. I think the Shen ad was to add leadership for when he departs, and the Tampa not re-signing Stamkos that summer, and this whole facade that, you know, this is the new Tampa. You know, I could just see that being part of the bullshit there.
Yeah, you did say that. It's a good point.
Dom, what caliber of assets would you trade to Carolina if the return was GM Eric Tolsky and head coach Rod Brind'Amour running the Islanders?
Nothing.
I don't want my GM looking like that. He hasn't
proven anything to me yet. Yeah. And Rod's a good coach, but he can't get over, like, you want to tell me it's John Cooper?
Yeah, I'm with you on that, actually. Totally agree.
You want to tell me the Tampa Bay GM coach combo to get behind that?
Dom's going to hate our answer there, but yeah, fuck those guys.
You know, Dom loves Rod, or he doesn't like Rod?
He probably hates Rod, but likes the way his team plays for him.
Yeah.
Dom's
a lunch pail guy. He likes the lunch pail hockey.
K-Mac, do you think Austin Matthews' leg now having to be amputated will impact his trade value this offseason? Ugh, he's not getting traded.
Oh, I don't know.
He yearns for the America.
Yeah.
The freedom.
He's sick of that. He's sick of Toronto.
Okay, like the rest.
Can we just, for a quick second, the fact that no one came after that was insane.
Yeah, that was Gunas wild.
Took the knee out. Really bad hit on fucking Austin Matthews.
That was embarrassing. No one every on player. Was
in, like, see, and all the people crying about Barzell hacking Marchment.
You know what that's reminiscent of, Rocco? You know what it's reminiscent of?
What's that?
when Tage got lit the fuck up last year and no one on Buffalo stood up for him.
Yeah, but did you see the – I actually retweeted it today. Someone posted Dahlin got hammered this year, I think, by Hagel.
Yeah.
And immediately Hagel's still down on the ground and you see the guy in the Sabres, his gloves are off and he's like going in to punch Hagel in the face.
This year's Sabres team's got good vibes. I'm just saying, you know.
Yeah. Toronto's a mess.
Don't you notice every team that defends each other and has good vibes are the teams that have good records? Like the second teams don't have a good record. They just mail in this time of year. Berube knows he's getting fired at the end of the year and he's still in the press. Like, all right, guys, I don't know what the hell that was.
Imagine your job. Like, picture yourself at your job. Things aren't going well. And then when you finish said job, you have to go face a room of people that are just going, what's going on? What's not going well? Why isn't it working? Like, that fucking sucks. And the fact that you have guys that won a gold medal and they go back and they're asked all these stupid questions after the fact, like, just let it be.
Agreed. So we have a couple of questions that are more difficult to screen. We have some funny ones. Who does Jack hate more, Shen or Aitchison? Neither of them. Is there a world where Robertson doesn't sign in Dallas and the Isles make a run for him? This one's from Nortz.
No shot.
I don't think so. And I don't think we have the pieces to go get him.
He's a West Coast boy anyway.
And Dallas, but for some odd reason they decided to trade him, it's going to be like a Kachuk-esque trade where they're going to want ready now guys, like big time guys that like we, for example, for us to get like in that mix, they'd probably want a Barzal type return, which we really can't do because we need to add to Barzal, not, you know, trade Barzal and get a player that's maybe slightly better. We need Barzal plus someone else that's just as good.
Agreed. Final question. Joe, 727. Why do you think the Islanders don't trust Isaiah George?
I have no idea.
I think he had an injury-plagued season at the beginning. I think they wanted to kind of take him along slowly. He's still young. And they got, as we said earlier, they got Susie for that PK role. And I think maybe they don't trust him in that role. But I think next year is the big, big year for George. Like next year's make or break. This year was injuries and they wanted him to get the full development, whatever else. So I think you get Susie as the veteran guy, take on those PK minutes and then let Schaefer develop his game, play the rest, power play, 5-on-5, and you hope George develops and just gets fully healthy down there. Then eventually, hopefully as soon as next year, George could be a guy that's a major factor at the next level.
Agreed. I think the fact he can't play the penalty kill is what's holding him back. Is what held him back from being a full-timer on the roster. I still disagree with it. I hope he's gaining some valuable experience in Bridgeport right now. Wouldn't mind if they flirted the idea of putting him on the right side and to play that position down there so he can maybe do it up here because I know he's willing to. But that does it for tonight, questions-wise.
Yep.
Beautiful.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks for listening. Talk to you soon.
Father wears his Sunday best. Mother's tired, she needs a rest. The kids are playing up downstairs. Sister's sighing in her sleep. Brother's got a night to keep. He can't hang around. Io's house in the middle of our street. House.